for what's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The leaders of the United States and Japan have underscored decades of post-war reconciliation in their bilateral security alliance in a symbolic joint visit to the Pearl Harbor Memorial in Hawaii. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe expressed what he called sincere and everlasting condolences to the families of the more than 2,400 Americans killed in Japan's surprise attack on U.S. naval and air forces 75 years ago that brought the U.S. into World War II. Mr. Abe said, "We must never repeat the horrors of war." President Obama called the U.S.-Japan alliance the cornerstone of peace in the Asia-Pacific region and a force for progress around the world.
The presence of Prime Minister Abe here today reminds us of what is possible between nations and between peoples. Wars can end. The most bitter of adversaries can become the strongest of allies. The fruits of peace always outweigh the plunder of war. This is the enduring truth of this hallowed harbor.
Mr. Abe's visit to Pearl Harbor, seen as a response to President Obama's trip to Hiroshima, Japan in May, sought of the U.S. atomic bombing, one of two in 1945, aimed at bringing World War II to an end. Nearly 300 members of Somalia's federal parliament were sworn in Tuesday by the country's chief justice weeks after a month-long election conducted among thousands of clan elders. More parliamentary elections are expected, giving the chronically unstable East African country nearly 350 lawmakers. But the office of president remains unfulfilled. That election has been put off for a fourth time with no new date set. The country has not had a stable central government since 1991. This is VOA News. Israeli officials are set to approve permits Wednesday for the construction of hundreds of new settler homes in occupied East Jerusalem, days after a UN Security Council resolution was approved, critical of Israel's settlement activity. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been critical of the U.S. decision to abstain from that vote rather than veto it, allowing the measure to be adopted. Israeli officials Tuesday said they have ironclad information. The Obama administration helped craft the resolution. That brought this response from U.S. spokesman Mark Toner.
The United States did not draft this resolution, nor did it put it forward. It was drafted, initially introduced, as we all know, by Egypt in coordination with the Palestinians and others. When it was clear that the Egyptians and the Palestinians would insist on bringing this resolution to a vote, and that every other country on the council would, in fact, support it.
The measure condemned Israeli settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem as a flagrant violation under international law. Meanwhile, Secretary of State John Kerry is to lay out his vision for ending the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in a speech Wednesday. Russian investigators reportedly believe a fault in the wing flaps of a Tu-154 military aircraft caused Sunday's crash into the Black Sea, killing all 92 people aboard. But Transport Minister Maxim Sokolov said it's too early to draw conclusions. He expects a flight data recorder recovered Tuesday to help authorities solve the mystery. U.S. Senator John McCain and Tallinn Tuesday pledged U.S. security support to the three Baltic states of Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia in the event of Russian aggression.
At this time, when we see things like the cyber attacks that are being conducted by Russia, China, and other countries, when we see the continued aggression in Crimea and in eastern Ukraine, when we see continued threats that are made to Georgia, our relationship is more important than perhaps it's been in a long, long time.
McCain said Washington is fully committed to its Baltic NATO allies ahead of the Donald Trump administration. Cuba's economy minister told the National Assembly Tuesday the economy shrank nearly 1% this year, due largely to the economic crisis in key ally Venezuela, and despite improving ties with the U.S., but Ricardo Cabrillas said he hopes for moderate growth in the new year. Carrie Fisher, who rose to fame as Princess Leia in the Star Wars films, died Tuesday at age 60. She was rushed to a Los Angeles hospital last week after suffering a heart attack aboard a flight from London. Fisher, the daughter of actress Debbie Reynolds and singer Eddie Fisher. Carrie Fisher was well known as an author of multiple books, including a memoir entitled The Princess Diarist. Carrie Fisher dead at the age of 60. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, December 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia swears in a new parliament.
Today's event is a step forward in the right direction. Somalia now is going to new era, the new chapter now. These new members of parliament, almost a significant number of them are women.
That's regional analyst Abdi Wahab Sheikh Abdi Samad. South Sudanese forced out of their country by conflict find a way to connect with relatives. A couple from the United States visiting Liberia for their wedding anniversary has died mysteriously. And Sierra Leone police are investigating the mysterious deaths of a retired army general and a retired magistrate.
So far, we have been able to establish that there is no evidence of robbery. He could have been targeted by the murderers, and we are working on a number of possibilities regarding the motive.
Francis Manu is the Inspector General of the Sierra Leone National Police on the mysterious death of former Army Chief Lieutenant General Samuel Williams. A modest recovery is expected for African economies in 2017, and 2016 was a mixed bag for species conservation. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somalia swore in a new parliament members on Tuesday, but is delaying its presidential election for a fourth time, possibly until early next year. Mohamed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
Tuesday's swearing-in ceremony in Mogadishu saw 281 members of the upper and lower houses of parliament take office. Independent regional analyst Abdi Wahab Sheikh Abdi Samad says this parliament is better than the previous one.
Today's event is a step forward in the right direction. Somalia now is going to new era, the new chapter now. The new members of parliament, almost 45% of them are new, are former members of the parliament, while 55% of the members are new, very young people, energetic people, well-educated people. These new members of parliament, almost a significant number of them are women, unlike other times.
Somalia could not hold direct nationwide elections due to ongoing insecurity and logistical issues. So the members of the upper and lower house were chosen by a selection of clan leaders and regional representatives. The president will then be elected by parliament. Critics say the process has been marred by vote-buying, violence and intimidation. The Electoral Commission says it is redoing the elections of five MP posts because of these irregularities. The commission said at one point that it will redo 24 races, but then dropped the number back to five. Other seats are still vacant as clan leaders have not yet decided on the candidates. The Somali Auditor General told the VOA Somali service earlier this month that some candidates were paying $5,000 to $30,000 to get elected to the parliament. In a joint media statement, the United Nations, African Union, European Union, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, Britain and the United States welcomed the inauguration of parliamentary representatives Tuesday, timing it a step forward. But the international community also expressed concerns about the last-minute decision to add 18 more seats to the upper house. Somalia's National Leadership Forum announced the additional seats on Saturday. The decision contradicts the constitution, which limits the upper house to 54 senators. Professor Mohamed Ali is the Chancellor of the Southern University in Baidoa. He says the reason why we are having delays is because the presidential candidates are interfering with the process and are making a decision based on how it is going to favour them. Paying salaries of 275 MPs is already hard. They've also created 54 seats of senators and now they have added up to 18 more senators. It is not even clear what those people's roles will be. This is not sustainable, he says. Current President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud is a member of the National Leadership Forum. He's running for re-election against six challenges. Parliament was scheduled to vote for the president on Wednesday, but Electoral Commission officials now tell the VOA Somali service that the vote has been postponed to January 24th, though the commission has yet to confirm that date publicly. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Sierra Leone police are investigating the mysterious deaths of two high-profile individuals. Lawyer Imran Rahman was reportedly attacked last Friday and strangled to death, while retired Army Chief Lieutenant General Samuel Williams was shot and killed by unknown assailants. Francis Monu, Inspector General of the Sierra Leone National Police, says two suspects have been apprehended in the killing of Barrister Rahman. With regards to the death of Lieutenant General Williams, Monu says the police are working on a number of possibilities. He says the two murders are isolated and in no way an indication that Sierra Leone is not safe.
Actually, we were shocked at the death, and we took active interest in the matter in order to investigate what could have led to the brutal murder of the retired Lieutenant General. And so far, we have been able to establish that there is no evidence of robbery. He could have been targeted by the murderers, and we are working on a number of possibilities regarding the motive for the killing. But we know that the physical security of the premises where he was living was vulnerable, and there was no physical presence of security at the time of the murder.
You said the brutal murder. Can you describe for us exactly what happened?
The body was found lying in a pool of blood, suggesting it was a gunshot wound, but we are not conclusive yet. We are having a post-mortem examination tomorrow, and then that will give us further insight as to what could have been the cause. And then we will also have an idea of who could have perpetrated the action.
So then what can you tell us, Mr. Inspector General, about the death of Imran Rahman, the retired magistrate?
In relation to the death of the retired magistrate, that one was a robbery because the assailants strangled him to death and then were able to cut away with several properties from his home, including his vehicle. And so far, we have been able to arrest two of the suspects and have recovered also a reasonable quantity of the property that was stolen from him.
You said, Mr. Inspector General, with regards to the retired Lieutenant General Samuel Williams' death, that the area where he lived did not have enough security. Should Sierra Leoneans be concerned when you say that? Can they say that the country or Freetown is not safe?
Oh, no, no. These are targeted operations, isolated operations, which do not in any way have anything to do with the general security of the country. Sometimes these isolated incidents do happen, and we don't know what could have been the motivation, whether it was as a result of what he did while he served as Chief of Defense Staff, or whether he had any personal quarrels with the neighborhood or ex-combatants living around the area where he lived. But that does not in any case suggest that the country is under any security threat, because people are going about their businesses, and we just had a very successful Christmas holiday celebration, and everything is just right.
Thank you very much again for talking with us, and let me say happy holidays to you and your family.
Yes, I wish you very many happy returns. Thank you very much.
Francis Manu is the Inspector General of the Sierra Leone National Police. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Today is Wednesday, December 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. We send shout-out to listeners on our affiliate station, Buffalo FM, in Monrovia, Liberia. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Police in Liberia's capital are investigating the mysterious death of a Liberian couple from the U.S. state of Minnesota. Lawrence and Shelley Gross arrived in Monrovia December 23rd to celebrate their fifth wedding anniversary, which was supposed to have been on Christmas Day, but they were found dead on Christmas morning, apparently from carbon monoxide poisoning from a generator. Liberia National Police spokesman Sam Collins says the police forensic department has launched an investigation into the exact cause of death. He appeals to the public to avoid wild speculations.
Since Sunday afternoon, an investigation is ongoing. We have visited the scene where the incident took place. We have also had the opportunity to carry on physical examination of the two bodies. And what we can inform the public right now is that an initial report will be made to the public in a soon amount of time. So an ongoing investigation by the forensic department of the Liberia National Police is ongoing to establish the cause of death.
And how soon do you think that preliminary report will be made known to the public?
It might come out today, and we want to ask members of the public to restrain a higher level of calm in terms of what opinion that may have happened, and allow the police that have the statutory mandate to investigate a situation like this to come out with a report.
You are right, Mr. Collins, because I've been reading online all kinds of speculations about what might have happened. I'm sure you too have been reading.
Definitely. There are all kinds of speculation as it relates to the death of the Minnesota couple. But what we can tell the public is that let everybody exercise a high degree of patience as we await the police to conduct what I refer to as a comprehensive investigation so that report can be made known to the public. And that we know that everybody has their own way of thinking. We don't have control over the thinking of people. What we have control over is what the police department will release.
One account say that perhaps the couple died from carbon monoxide in the house. What is the direction of the police investigation? Are you looking at that?
Certainly, we are looking at that. We are looking at last contact. We are looking at last associate, the day the king, who all the associated with, where they went. These are things that we're looking at, whether it was carbon or outside. We are looking at every circumstances surrounding their death. And so we ask the public to exercise a higher degree of restraint.
Assuming the couple died from carbon monoxide, I know that some people in Liberia use generators. Do you think that might have been the cause? And what is the regulation? Is there any government regulation in terms of how generators should be used, their proximity to homes?
I don't know whether there is a regulation as it relates to how people should use generators. We have investigated a lot of cases where people die as a result of inhaling carbon dioxide from their generator. But I am not seeing that was the cause of the death of the couple. That is not what we're seeing right now. Let the public allow us to carry on our investigation so that we'll be able to come out with a very comprehensive report to the public.
Once again, so nice to talk with you, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you, James. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Sam Collins is the spokesman for the Liberian National Police. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. 2016 was predicted to be a tough year for African economies, and it delivered. Heavyweights Nigeria and South Africa slumped into recessions, and others also felt the burn of dipping global commodity prices. Economists predict that 2017 will see some recovery, but say many African nations need to be serious about diversifying their economies to better insulate themselves from future shocks. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
African economies showed two divergent trends, with the traditional leaders faltering amid a storm of falling commodity prices, unpredictable and destructive weather like droughts and floods across large swaths of the continent, and slow economic growth in China, a major investor and trading partner.
So this year you've seen kind of the two Africans, the commodity exporters going through tough times, while the non-commodity exporters being a bit more resilient.
That's Nigerian economist Nonso Obakili, who researches Nigerian and sub-Saharan economic trends for Economic Research Southern Africa. He says 2016 was hard on African commodity giants as oil prices fell to lows not seen since the global financial crisis of 2008. Resource-rich economies like Nigeria, Angola, and Mozambique foundered. Nigeria battled its highest rate of inflation in 11 years. Meanwhile, what we think of as resource-poor nations, like Ethiopia and Rwanda, maintained higher growth rates, as high as an estimated 8% in agriculture-heavy Ethiopia, despite the nation's worst drought in decades, according to the World Bank. Martin Davis, Managing Director of Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte, says these successful African economies focus on expanding and diversifying their economies to attract foreign investment.
Kenya remains a regional hegemon. Tanzania is looking somewhat more competitive, largely because of political shift, and those, to an extent, reforms in Tanzania would set up Tanzania for better growth prospects going forward, more quality growth. I think that's very important. Ethiopia, strong sort of growth trajectory, despite the political fallout in the country taking place. So looking pretty strong. You have the agile economy like Rwanda doing incredibly well, small economy, increasingly looking towards services. The most, you know, arguably, I would argue, the easiest place to do business on the continent.
Major economic institutions predict some improvement in African economies in 2017, as global commodity prices are expected to rise. But Obakili says commodity exporters also need to improve their economic policies.
For Nigeria, Angola, Mozambique, getting the basics right in 2017 is very, very important. Getting back to a functional foreign exchange market is very important. Getting back to credit limits in terms of debt issues is very important. So if they get the basics right, then there's a opportunity that at least things will start to pick up in 2017.
But Davis is less optimistic.
I'm afraid now, from the policy perspective, it's all too late. And African economies, by and large, many of them remain price takers rather than price setters. And diversification is mentioned about the skills you have in your economy. Innovation, wealth creation, diversification ultimately follows people. If you're not creating domestic talent or at least attracting foreign talent into your country, you're effectively going nowhere.
Governments do appear to be listening. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, for one, has repeatedly pledged over the past year to end the country's oil dependence. But diversification doesn't happen overnight. Economists say it may take a year or more for Nigeria to rebound from 2016, and as much as a generation to really break free from oil. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Sudanese citizens who have been forced to live outside their own country because of the ongoing conflict say they miss home but have found a way to cope with their homesickness. As Mugumi Davis Rakarinj reports from Kigali, Rwanda, they have found a way to connect with home through social media.
20-year-old Paulina Matiop, a senior 6 student at Kompe Senior Secondary School in Uganda, says he has not returned home to his native East Nile state since 2013, due to the ongoing conflict. Matiop says his relatives live in the United States and other parts of Africa, so the cheapest way to stay connected is social media.
Sometimes it's not easy to communicate with phones, but sometimes use Facebook to do that.
But he says his father and mother, who now live in Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, do not know how to use Facebook. He has to call them, but it's very expensive to talk by phone. Sometimes he sends letters along with some acquaintances traveling to Juba to give to his relatives. Another person who would prefer to use social media to keep in touch with their relatives is 29-year-old Sarah David, a single mother who works in a restaurant in Kampala. Sarah says she primarily uses her cell phone to communicate with her family back home, but sometimes gets on Facebook.
Sometimes Facebook, we are talking together on Facebook, just chatting. Even my father is there in from Khartoum, chatting also, just talking with the phone, but it's not some minute, just a minute only, because talking there is too much taking money. When you put 5,000, they just finish. I was like 3 minutes only.
Onyango Madit, a student at Makerere University in Uganda, says he too uses social media and phone calls to stay in touch with his people. He says he also pays 5,000 Uganda shillings, or about $1.50, to talk to his parents in Juba for 1 minute. So he doesn't call very often. In 2014, East African countries, including South Sudan, signed what they called One Network, which was aimed at reducing call tariffs. The network also allows people to use roaming with their phones without incurring extra charges. But for friends and relatives who live in US and Europe, Madit says keeping in touch is a bit easier.
Struggle a lot to talk back to the people at home, and it's hard and it's expensive to us too. I just use Facebook like Messenger, not video call, but just through text.
Speaking by phone from Nairobi, Kenya, where he's visiting relatives, Kwanyi Dao Dao says he keeps in touch with his family on Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, and other new social media apps.
As a through social media, that we normally communicate. Others will normally make normal phone calls.
Dao says sometimes he writes handwritten letters, as his family did a generation ago, and sends them home through friends. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
Human impacted climate change, habitat loss, and hunting have led to some pretty grim statistics when it comes to maintaining the planet's biodiversity. Viewer Kevin Enoch looks back at 2016 in wildlife conservation.
The parade of biodiversity on the planet is stunning. Unfortunately, it is increasingly at risk. According to the International Union for Conservation of Nature, 41% of all amphibians and 25% of mammals are under threat. One of the newest additions to the red list of vulnerable species is the giraffe. This long-necked beauty is finding less and less room to roam.
People started clearing down vegetation to create room for agriculture. So in the process, the giraffe started dying due to lack of food. And also human beings used to kill them in case they invaded in the crop field.
This is Sudan, the last male northern white rhino left alive on the planet, and the future of his species rests on his aging shoulders. Rhinos are being poached to extinction for their horns, prized as an aphrodisiac in some Asian cultures. To save the species, conservationists are dehorning rhinos to deter poachers, but even that drastic measure might not be enough.
The day might come when all the rhinos are dehorned and it's still worth killing a rhino for just that 400 or 500 grams of horn, because the price of rhino horn is so huge that, you know, it's worth killing it for a small half a kg.
And a new survey showed the African savanna elephant population has dropped 30% from 2007 to 2014 and is declining at about 8% every year. But in other areas, there are too many elephants, and conservationists have begun relocation projects to help restore populations to their historical ranges. Other animals are getting harder to find, like Grevy's zebra. There are only about 2,500 left in the world. The orangutan and their great ape cousins, the gorillas, are both critically endangered, and conservationists believe South Africa's great white shark may also be facing possible extinction. But it is not all bad news. The elusive snow leopard has made a comeback, and trackers estimate there are as many as 140 in Afghanistan's Wakhan National Park. And scientists in Vietnam and Thailand have just added a number of species to the books during their explorations of the Mekong region. New discoveries include the rainbow-headed snake, this terrifying-looking gecko called a bunkowski, and these horned tree agamids, lizards found in Thailand.
So on the one hand, you know, this is incredibly exciting that we're finding these new species, but it also encourages us to work even harder to make sure that when we do find new species, that not only do we protect the habitat where they live, which has in turn benefits for us as people, but also really work hard to improve the enforcement to ensure that they're not lost to the trade, and to really work on changing people's attitudes to consuming wild animals in a way that is just not sustainable at all.
The future of many of these species rests on human shoulders. Doing the things necessary to ensure their existence into the future could in turn help ensure ours as well. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Wednesday, December 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Tune in to VOA programs on your radio and on the Internet. We bring you news about Africa and the world 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. News, talk shows, sports, music, everything you want to hear. Available on the radio and the web on The Voice of America. Find the VOA program guide at www.voanews.com and check local listings for stations near you that carry VOA programming.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.